Welcome to everyone to the Simple Acts of Grief of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Seth and I'm an alcoholic. For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with a serenity prayer. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
All right, Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. They are across the main foyer and up the small flight of stairs. This time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry a clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism and on the basis of AA simple actions. I will now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. It does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and to help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation. This evening, we are discussing step 10. And please welcome to our panel this evening, Ms. Melissa and Ms. Debbie. I'm going to read the first paragraph on page 84. And the panel will then share for a few minutes after each reading. All right. Continue to take personal inventory, and when we are wrong, promptly admit it. Page 84. This thought brings us to step 10, which suggests we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set rights any new mistake as we go along. We vigorously commence this way of life, of living, as we cleaned up the past. We have entered the world of the spirit. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for our lifetime. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. We discuss them with someone immediately and make amends quickly if we have harmed anyone. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Love and tolerance of others is our code. I believe Ms. Melissa.
Hey everybody, my name is Melissa. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey Melissa.
Get the basics out of the way. My sobriety date is September 8th, 2014. I have a home group, Westside Young and Sober. Mm-hmm. We have an anniversary coming up next month, so come, we'll talk about that later. I have a sponsor. She is aware she sponsors me. I don't check in with her probably quite as often as I should, but she is aware that I'm in existence. Let's just put it that way. When I got to step 10, I had this very naive thought that I'm not going to probably have to do much here because I've done the steps up to this point, so now I'm going to be a good person from now on. There's not a whole lot involved. It was very, very naive. And that is absolutely not the case. I turn into a lunatic very quickly when I'm not practicing principles. And that's what step 10 is basically asking me to do, and it's asking me to look at it on a daily basis versus like on a four-step going back through time and recalling things. You would think doing the present would be easier for me, and it's not. I don't like to look where I'm bad now. It's just not usually where I like to be. But, you know, my life was riddled with selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear, and it still can be riddled with that. Dishonesty is probably one of my things that's biggest on my radar. When I did my fourth step and I did that ideals list, my ideals list, yes, it's a sex ideals, but it's a relationship ideals for me today, and that's developed over time. And dishonesty is the number one on top for me, both in what I seek in a partner and a friend, in myself, because I lived a life of double identity for the longest time. One, I had no clue who I truly was and what I truly wanted. I'm a people pleaser to the extreme, so I was never honest with anybody. I would tell you anything and everything that I thought you wanted to hear, do what you wanted me to do so that you would like me, so that you would keep me around, because I was so afraid that I would be alone. And I still have that fear today. Granted, it comes in different forms and fashions now, but it's still there. That stuff doesn't completely go away. You know, God helps to take care and take away a lot of that, but it still does crop up from time to time. Resentment always will be there. One of the favorite phrases I've heard someone say, I was a little over a year sober, and it was a Christmas Day meeting. Someone that used to live here, who's actually now moved back, but he said, expectations are resentments under construction. And I am the queen of having expectations for people, for events, for anything going on in my life. You know, I have expectations for my coworkers, I have expectations for my family, I have expectations for my friends, and when you don't meet those, then I get pissed. And the bad part about that is I never communicate those expectations. It's always in my head, and I just think you're miraculously supposed to know what I'm thinking. Because I like to think I know what you're thinking. I like to think that I'm able to read minds, and that's not the case either. Selfishness, I learned, you know, early in the steps that's the root of my troubles. I'm selfish and self-centered, and everything I do is about me. So as I'm practicing the steps and practicing these principles and being of service to others, that dissipates. It doesn't ever completely go away. It never will completely go away. I understand that today. My understanding of this very early on was I'm wiped clean of all of these things. That's absolutely not been the case for me. And then fear. You know, I talked about fear already a little bit, but my life has shot through with fear. When I went through the steps, did my first four step, I was like, I'm not really afraid of a lot. No, I'm afraid of everything. I just don't want to admit it because in my eyes, then it made me weak. Today I realize that admitting my fears, admitting my faults, that's powerful. That's strength. It takes someone that's aware of themselves to be able to do those things. And I'm grateful to know that I'm not a perfect individual and I don't have to be perfect. I will never be perfect because that's a really tough standard to live up to. The problem is I have to remember that for other people as well. And that's where I start to get into trouble is when I have, again, those expectations for other people that you should know how to do that. I've explained how to do that to you, how you should do that 10 times. Why don't you get it yet? The group of people that I have the most difficulty with in regards to that, especially with the love and tolerance of others as our code, are fellow alcoholics, because you know better. You work this program, you should know better, you know? And it's a direct reflection of me, because I'm looking in the mirror every time that I have that thought. It's so horrible, but like I said, I try to practice a program of rigorous honesty, and if I didn't say these things out loud, I would be lying. You know, it's not easy being a human being. It's really not. And thankfully today I have some tools to help me navigate through life. So I think that's all I got.
Thank you. I'm a recovered alcoholic named Debbie.
Debbie.
And my sobriety date's October 24th, 1982. And this is my home group, A Simple Actions. And I have had a wonderful day, and I hope it continues. So, anyway, you know, I love being in the world of the spirit. I was a hippie. Anything that alters my consciousness, I'm all for it. And so, so I have found through those years of experience, and I had to have my own experiences. Another thing I have learned is that these 12 steps really do alter my consciousness. And so I'm looking at that. You know, it's an open book test if you're new. First of all, step 10 is after 139, so if it doesn't make any sense, it's okay. Some people will throw it at you pretty early to start reading these pages. That was not told to me, that whole think thing. They didn't have me doing that for a long time. But anyway, so I know for me, the biggies, I was an awful liar. I know we're supposed to be good liars. I was an awful liar. I was a bartender, was married to the beer truck driver, Budweiser beer truck driver guy, and I didn't have to go to work till 11, but I just couldn't get it together by 11 one morning. So I called the bar and I said, I'm not going to make it to work. I'm sick. And they said, no, I'm sorry. I'm not going to make it to work. I'm having car trouble. And they said, see, I'm an awful liar. Can't even get it straight here. We know, Debbie, your car is in the parking lot of where I work. And so that's, I can't keep all the facts together to be a good liar, but who I lie to continually is myself. I am accused of being brutally honest in my past to others. I will tell you the truth as I see it, but I will never tell myself the truth. And that's what, you know, on the back of our medallions for the, at the beginning of sobriety, it's like, to thine own self be true. And I'm like, I have no idea what that means. And the whole selfishness thing, I remember telling my husband, we've been married quite a while, and he had two boys, and I decided when I was 13, I don't like children, nor do I want any. And so I told him that it would be good for me because I know I'm selfish, and I would have to learn how to not be selfish. And they did do that in a very slow, painful way, but they did do that. And so selfishness is still probably one of my biggest ones. Fear, absolutely, is my biggest one today. I was very much, I'm not afraid of anything when I came in here. And now I know that all of my resentments, first of all, when my sponsor was telling me about resentments, I had no clue what that was. I don't have any resentments. I have rage. And I have joy. Those are my two emotions. And so we had to break it down a little bit about what these resentments were. And most days I'm pretty resentment free, and we're going to talk about why in a minute. But when it flares up and it's that quick, that whole hot flash of epinephrine or whatever's flying through me goes off, it's not really about a resentment, it's about fear. And I still lead with anger today. I'm not one of the shy girls that backs away and says, oh no, I'm one of those that's gonna come right at you if I'm up against a wall. So that's not the best side of me. And I, again, I have to have my own experience of, you know, it talks about, we're gonna read the promises of this step, and it talks about, if you haven't got those promises going on, then you probably haven't finished that step. And so what I had to really figure out is this working for me? Is this selfishness working for me? Is this dishonesty, resentment, fear, are any of these working for me? Because like I said, it's an open book test. From the very beginning, they're telling me what's wrong with me. I really, you know, we really drag out the fourth step. I'm guilty of it too. But they're telling me right in here what's wrong with me. If I just start with those four, I got a whole lot to work with there. And so I like to also bring it into today and how this step works for me. I will share that over the years, I have shared that step 10 was my least used step, because I'm gonna live a perfect life so I don't ever have to apologize to anybody, because I hate saying I'm wrong in early sobriety. And so is that working for me? Not so well, really not working so well. And so today, I am a lot older than I was when I got sober, and I'm thinking about retiring. I've been working at the same job for 30 years, which is unheard of. And so I'm talking to this retirement person, and he's quite sure that I can retire and be okay. And I'm like having palpitations and, I mean, physical fear going on. And we've talked about it for like a year, and I've got this fear, and I'm like, what the heck is going on with this fear? And so, duh, Deb, why don't you ask God to remove the fear? I mean, this is the second time it's told me in the book to do that. And so I did that. And all of this is over the phone, these conferences. And so I did. I prayed and I said, I don't know what I'm afraid of here, God, but please just come into this conversation with me and let me know what's happening here. And then I talked to someone immediately. I talked to that person about it on the phone, and because we had a plan for what the call was supposed to be. And I said, I need to tell you that I'm having palpitations, and I am nowhere near as assured of being retired as you are. And so I talked to him about it, and then I didn't need to make an amends. I hadn't heard anybody on that one. But what happened once I hung that phone up was, over the next couple of days, I got a phone call from somebody that I don't always get a phone call from. And because I wasn't so full of fear, I had a pretty clear head to be able to take this conversation, and it was a pretty serious conversation, and to be open and honest and truthful with this person, because I just wasn't so caught up in me and, oh my God, what's happening and why am I so afraid? And then I had another opportunity to call someone and say, hey, you want to go and spend some money, one of my other things. And so I went to Sephora and got beautiful. I'm glowing. And so and that's what I don't do when I'm afraid of money, is I'm not going to go spend money. I'm tight as the bark on a tree, like the book talks about. And so anyway, so it works when I work it. Step 10 is much easier for me today. The worst it usually gets for me is work is my big thing. I'll have to get up and physically leave the room, because learning I had a zipper on my mouth was the best lesson I've had in here. So I have to zip it and get out of the room and make a phone call. And because I have years of where I didn't zip it, and I'm getting, you know, written up, and I'm whatever, you know, I can't say put your big girl pants on at work anymore, and I just have to, and I really don't want to, because it's very cold and callous, and that's who I was cold and callous, and, you know, grow up and whatever. And so what happens to me is I start to have some inspiration of what's it feeling like to that other person, the way you, because I had a vice president look at me and say, so you are aware of how you talk to people? And I said, yes, I am. And, you know, she retired last year, and I was able to go hug her, because that was a very intensive AA weekend of with my sponsor and doing 4 through 9, which is what this is all about. And because it was on Friday when we had that meeting, and I said, give me to Monday to think about it, because the ultimatum was given to me. And by Monday, I could see how I was treating other people where I could not see it on Friday. It was, don't they know who I am, and the whole arrogance and what I usually lead with, the anger. And so it does work when I work it. And the whole love and tolerance of others is our code. I think part of it is just aging, because there's not a whole lot out of there that I haven't done that's stupid. And so when I see somebody doing something stupid, it's like, yeah, I did that. I got that. I understand that. Yeah. And so I just, I talked to somebody, it's been a while, but it's like I was this really hard, rigid, cold, and callous person. And these steps are like water dripping on you, and they just drip and drip and drip on that stone, and you just kind of get your edges worn off despite yourself, you know. And so that is a big one for me. Love and tolerance of others is our code. I was talking to my brother before I came tonight, and he was sharing something about something stupid. And I said, and not that he did, of course, but anyway, I said, you know, when they're not asking for my opinion, I don't give it anymore. Because that was what I led with also. Let me show you how you're doing this wrong. Let me take that mouse and show you how to do this for the third time. And now I don't have to say anything because they're not asking me. Thanks.
Thank you. All right, continuing on page 84. And we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. For by this time, sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil from it as from a hot flame. We react sanely and normally. We will find that this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude toward liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That is the miracle of it. We are not fighting it, neither we are avoiding temptation. We feel as though we had been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky nor are we afraid. That is our experience. That is how we react so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition.
I love this paragraph. There's a lot of paragraphs I like in this book. This is definitely one of them. And, you know, these are the promises Debbie was referring to. The sanity is referring to the sanity of obsession of drink. And I had a really good experience with this, really good bad experience with this. Right before I turned 2 years sober, I was sitting comfortably in a sponsor-sponsee relationship where I had no accountability and I was back to running the show. And I was kind of told, you don't get sober to live in the rooms, you have, you know, you get sober to go live life, etc., blah, blah, blah. And I knew deep down that was not the right direction, but I liked that answer. You know, I was young, single, wanting to date, you know, I don't got time for going to all these meetings. You know, I had been going to like 5 or 6 meetings a week, and I'll just dial it back to my home group and I'll be fine. I've been through the steps. Okay, well, I've learned since then you don't get through the steps and stop, like you keep going. And so it didn't take long. It was about 3 weeks and I was getting real squirrely and I had started dating this man who is not one of us, and he threw bar darts like in a league. So he was in the bar 5 or 6 nights a week, and so I was in the bar 5 or 6 nights a week. Didn't have the desire to drink. I was there for a purpose, so I would tell myself. And, you know, everything was great until one Wednesday night after my home group. I went to my home group and then went and met him up at the bar and ordered a club soda with cranberry juice, is what I always order now. And the waitress comes back and hands me my drink, and it looks dark. And I was like, eh, it's dark in here. Put the straw in my mouth and go to take a drink, and wafted the fumes into my face. The liquid hit my tongue, and I was like, holy shit, there's alcohol in this. She had heard Calypso and cranberry, not club soda and cranberry. And I literally, my head was not moving slowly. My body moved slowly. My head was like, oh my God. I put it down, I sat back, I picked it back up, I smelled it again, and I was like, all right. And I walked across the bar to the bartender, and I was like, is there alcohol in this? And she's like, yeah. And I was like, I don't drink. This poor bartender felt worse than I did about the situation. She was horrified that she had served me a drink and she thought that I'd taken it. I would like to say like that was the end of that, but my thought process in all that was, well, I accidentally got served one, so if I drank it, would it really count? Like the fact that I had that thought tells me I was definitely not in a fit spiritual condition. And I would tell people that story and I'd leave that last part out for a while. I was like, yeah, I was so spiritual, like I calmly went over there, and I did calmly go over there, like I didn't go and throw it at her or scream at her, but like the insanity that it talks about had come back. Like, that's an insane thought. I haven't had a drink in almost 2 years. And my thought was, I know there's alcohol in it now, but I didn't order it. It was accidentally served to me, so does it really count if I drink it? You know, that's insane. My experience up to that point had led me to know, you know, if I drink again, I'm going to die. Like, that's going to happen, and it's probably going to happen pretty quickly, the way I drink. But again, I'm not going to take responsibility for that. The fact that I hadn't been practicing the steps actively. I had slacked way off in my program. You know, I wanted to brush all that aside and say it's that bartender's fault. She misheard me. No. I put myself in that position, and I have to accept responsibility for that. So, you know, thank God I have a higher power working in my life. And I was like, okay, God, I get it. You know, and a week later, I was no longer dating that guy. You know, today, I can go pretty much anywhere with anyone, and I'm fine. Family members, people will ask me, they're like, are you sure you're okay if we go here to listen to music? Or this summer, I went home for the first time since I got sober, back home in St. Louis, and was around some family members I haven't been around for a long time. We went back for my grandmother's funeral, and after the funeral, we went to a winery to sit and talk, and it was fine. Like, I'm just sitting there chatting, no big deal, drinking water. I can do that today because I do live in this program and I am in a fit spiritual condition, but I can tell you that's not always the case. And if I'm off my rocker, I've chosen to surround myself with people today that, one, will recognize that, and two, if I say I can't go or I'm not going to go, there's no judgment and there's no question. Or if we're already there and I'm like, something's not right, something's off, I need to leave, there's no question. We just leave. It's not a big deal. That is very different from how I used to behave and how I used to live. Like, if I wasn't comfortable, I'd just stick it out because, again, it harkens all back to that fear. I'm afraid of what you think of me. I'm afraid you're going to think I'm weak because I can't stick around. A lot of that just comes back around to the decisions and the choices that I make today and the people that I choose to surround myself with. I choose to surround myself with people today that care about me and will call me on my crap because they love me versus telling me what they think I want to hear, which is exactly what I used to do too. So I think that's it.
Thanks. All right, here's the kicker. And we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. If I get nothing else out of sobriety, you know, not drinking, of course, is first, but if I get nothing else out of this book, that is the best lesson I have ever learned in my life. It's been the, because I'm a fighter. If you're not a fighter, it might not mean much to you, but I'm a fighter. I was at work one day, and there was only two of us left in the office. It's a small office anyway, but the girl behind me is the only girl, she's retired now, but anyway, she's the only person I've shared that I'm in recovery with, because she sometimes wears two different shoes, and her hair's a little messed up, and she's told me that she's drank, and she's got some liver problems, and so I shared with her that I was in recovery if she was ever interested, but anyway. And she, the only thing she was interested in is when she retired, she called me to see if I knew anybody that could get her some pot. And I said, no, not able to help you with that. But anyway. We were sitting there and she said, Debbie, I want to know what drugs you're on because I want some of them. And I said, not on any drugs. Why do you say that? And she said, because you have changed so much, because she knew the harsh, cold, callous Debbie. We worked together for years, and she knows the Debbie that zips it and doesn't have the mean things to say. And she said, what's different? And I said, I have ceased fighting anything or anyone. You know, I learned early on it takes two to argue, and I really thought the other person should be the one to drop out, not me. And it tells me in step 9 and in a different scenario that, you know, there's a long period of reconstruction and we must take the lead. And I just find that to be true. If I really want to be peaceful, you know, I've been praying for peace since my hippie days, and God told me one day, then stop fighting. And I'm like, no, that's not the answer. I'm talking about world peace. I'm not talking about internal things, you know, but anyway. So I absolutely recommend, if you can try that, to give it a try. And the whole thing about sanity returning, I haven't wanted to drink in a long time. My desire to drink left me at about 9 months sober when I was in these, about step 9 going into 10 is when the desire to drink left me. And I'll share that because there are some new people in here. I am not a first nighter. I would come in, buy the book, sponsor myself, get up to step 3 and go get drunk and do that over and over and over again. because I'm too young, too smart, and too pretty to be in this room, and y'all just don't have it together to help me. And so when alcohol does what alcohol does to us, if we're a real alcoholic, and I came back into these rooms and I meant it, and I got someone to be my sponsor, and we were, again, up about to step 9, and I was still Tenenbaum, and I was still married to the Budweiser beer truck driver, and we were still going out on the boat every weekend, and everybody's drunk or drugging or whatever, except for me. I now got to be the designated boat driver, as well as the car driver, and I'd had enough. I'd had enough. I had not had the 9-step promises come true in my life yet. And I remember the best part of boating for me was the restaurants you got to go to and all your grubby gear. And we're sitting in this nice restaurant and they're all drinking. And I said, I've had enough. And I ordered a drink. And I got up from that table and I walked into the bathroom because I can just hear y'all screaming in my head. I've been hearing the truth about myself for about 9 months in these rooms and finding the truth about myself in these steps. And I went in the bathroom and I said, the first sincere prayer of my life was, dear God, don't let me take that drink. Because up till then, it had just been, I'm praying because she told me to, this is Debbie, I think this is phony, I'm not sure anybody's there, thank you for my sobriety, just as arrogant as I always was. And that day, I meant it, because I knew exactly what was going to happen as soon as I picked up that drink, because I had done it over and over and over again. And I went back and I didn't drink that drink. And I didn't know at the time how monumental that was and how what a change that was going to be in my sobriety. And I believe that is when the desire left me, is when I asked God to take it. I don't want to drink that drink today, God. So anyway, for the newcomers, there is hope in these rooms. And so I could care less about liquor. I usually don't know if they're selling liquor. The sponsee, if I'm with the sponsee, will usually point it out to me because they don't want to sit facing the bar, and so we'll sit a certain way, and I certainly can do that. I go to bars, I go to restaurants, I go to lock-in, I go to concerts, I go to anywhere that I want to go because I don't want to drink today because the problem has been removed. I am in a position of neutrality, and I really thought that was going to be kind of boring. I wasn't really interested in being neutral on a subject, and I absolutely love neutrality today. It's the most peaceful feeling I can feel inside us instead of all this. I have a lot of energy. My husband calls me a hummingbird in a shoebox, and so I'm always like this, and neutrality just kind of makes me breathe. I'm okay. The one thing I remember for quite a while in sobriety, especially early sobriety, it's talking about this new attitude is just given us without any thought or effort on our part. And I'm thinking, I've done a hell of a lot of thought and effort on this. I've had to do these steps up until this point, and, you know, I'm doing what they tell me. And what I heard in a meeting or a conference or somewhere was that what that's talking about is just with the alcohol, because no matter what I did, I could not get my brain to stop thinking about alcohol. So yeah, I had to do the actions. This is it started out with a program of action that we talk about, or maybe it's the next paragraph, but anyway, so God is the one. I do believe I'm sober through the grace of God. God is just a word to me. Actually, for me, it's more of a power source that I like to be plugged into, and when I'm plugged into it, I'm spiritually fit. When I'm hitting walls and when I'm getting angry and when I'm getting scared, it's because Debbie's driving the school bus. Debbie has no business driving the school bus anymore. And that's a hard thing to let go of. You know, where does it, you know, a couple of weeks ago, somebody was sharing on step 3 about trusting God, you know, and the longer you stay sober, you think, oh yeah, I trust God. But that whole money thing, I knew from day one. I used to tease about it. It's like, God, you got 90% of it, but my 403B, I got to take care of that. Sorry, you can't have the money. And then when I turned over the money, it was like, okay, evidently I can trust God in that too. So I'm not fighting temptation at all. And so the sanity thing, I used to describe myself as crazy as a shithouse rat. And so sanity to me is a lot more than just not wanting to take that drink. I am really, really happy. I can kind of judge my sobriety on just how wacky are you today, Debbie. And I really do appreciate the sanity that has come from this program. just to have a clear mind to know, okay, and we're going to talk about it in the next paragraph of why I need this clear mind. Let's see, so we're safe. I love that. We're safe and protected. I don't have like a image in my head of what this power looks like, but I do feel like I'm just supported, held somehow. I don't see arms. I just feel like I'm safe and protected. Not cocky or afraid. That is how we react, so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. People that I sponsor hear that a lot when they say, I want to do blah, blah, blah. That's great. Are you in fit spiritual condition? Because we can go anywhere if we are. All right, I think that's it for me.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. All right, we're on page 85. It is easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. We are headed for trouble if we do, for alcohol is a subtle foe. We are not cured of alcoholism. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. Every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all of our activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will and not mine be done. These are thoughts which must go with us constantly. We can exercise our willpower along this line all we wish in its proper use of the will.
So, you know, kind of what I was talking about on the last paragraph, I was resting on my laurels, and that's not been the only occasion I've rested on my laurels in my sobriety. You know, I'll get busy, I'm doing X, Y, and Z. Work's got me running 60, 70 hours a week. You know, I'll make up any excuse in the book to not do this because I just feel like being lazy. Because it's easy for me when things are going really good to forget how they got to be good. I like to think that I had everything to do with that. When, yes, I did the work, but my higher power and you guys are the ones that led me to that. And I have to keep doing that work. If I stop doing it, then I'm gonna start going backwards again. You know, every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all of our activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will not mine be done. That doesn't happen for me every day. When I get up in the morning and start my morning right, it starts out that way. But the day can quickly go in the other direction. If I start to take my will back and think, this isn't happening fast enough, you need to be doing this differently. I've got this that I need to get done. This is more important than answering this phone call right now. I don't need to help you. You should know how to help yourself by now. You know, all of those things. And that's when that selfishness starts to creep back into my day. And it's that subtle. It doesn't have to be anything huge. But all of those instances will compound and it can become explosive. You know, I'm very big on over-scheduling myself and doing too much. My sponsor likes to tell me that frequently. Like, why are you doing everything? Why aren't you giving other people the opportunity to help as well? Well, it's my ego because I like for you to see that I can hold a full-time job, foster kittens, help this person, help that person, do all this, go to meetings, hold these service positions, and everything's great. That's crazy. An abnormal person can't sustain that for any length of time. And that is just my ego thinking I can do everything by myself. And when I start to let another area of my program slack, resting on my laurels because I'm tired, I'm exhausted. I've done that to myself. No one's done that to me. No one's asked me to do that. That is all me taking back my will and thinking I know how to run things better. I don't need to let anybody else into this. That's usually when I've not been checking in with my sponsor on a regular basis. And, you know, I get a little crazy again. And, you know, again, I just keep circling back to think, goodness, this is a WE program, and I don't have to do any of this by myself. When I first came in, I sponsored myself for about 5 months, went to a lot of meetings, and was absolutely miserable and still wanted to drink. And thank goodness, when I was very very early, I don't know, my first week or so, I had met a couple of women at a meeting, one of which is sitting right here. Another one's in this room as well. And they did the whole just get in the car and go. And I'm so grateful. I, for the first time in my life, took direction. Total strangers. And I was like, okay, I'll just get in the car and go. And I, you know, I had that example to look at to see what this looks like. The one kept telling me, maybe you should get a sponsor. Maybe you should do this. Maybe you should do that. And it was 5 months later when it was 9 o'clock on a Saturday night and I wanted to drink at work. And then I was like, oh, maybe I should get a sponsor. I'm a slow learner sometimes. I'm a slow learner a lot of the time. But, you know, all of that for me, I needed to go through all of those experiences to get to where I'm at today. And that's okay. You know, my higher power has taken so much time to develop. I was probably almost 2 years sober before I would admit that I really didn't have a higher power. It was a check in the box for me. My first sponsor took me to the ARE at the oceanfront and said, you want to find higher power here? It's the second largest metaphysical library in the world. You'll find one here. I'm like, that's so complicated. She said, I know, and that's what you're doing with finding a higher power. You're complicating the hell out of a very simple thing. So today for me, you know, my higher power is a friend. I don't have a, you know, physical conception either, but it's, you know, kind, patient, loving, tolerant. Just, I have conversations. It's not me, like, praising to whatever. And I need that for me. That's what I need today. So that's it.
Thank you. All right, here's our program of action line. It's easy to let up on it. And I like the, it's a program of action. It's not a program necessarily of reading, not a program of thinking. Those are my go-tos before action, especially the thinking. You know, I am, as my friend back there says, my own best counsel, regardless of what the outcome is. And so it's the actions that I take, and I am a big believer in getting in the car, because when I first got sober, there was four of us that got in the car, and I was the baby, and I think the most sobriety was 8 years, 3 years, and maybe 2 years, and then me. And I would say, where are we going? And they'd say, just get in the car. And, you know, they didn't really care about whether I chose to or wanted to, and we... We would go to, it was when people would call a phone on a desk and say, I'd like to stop drinking. And they would get the information and call somebody, and we would go to their home. And I was scared to death that we're going into a stranger's home. And it was life-changing, you know. And then they would take me to the jail meetings, and they would take me to the hospital meetings, and and the funniest part of all of that, I was the weakest link, because I would get in anybody's car. If you got a car and you said get in it, I'm going to ask questions later, just like, what was that again that we just did? And because it's happening before I'm asking any questions. And so all of us are still sober today. My sponsor, I got sober in Baltimore. She's not my sponsor today because she's in Pennsylvania and I'm here, but I still keep in contact with her, and she just celebrated 45 years of sobriety at the beginning of July. And we're all still sober, so there's some merit to getting in the car. Although they did accuse me of crossing the white line in the tunnel twice one night when we were going to Yorktown. I deny it, but I don't know. Maybe I did because I'm talking. I was talking. But anyway, I love this thing about our daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. So we all know that line. We don't hear this so much every day as a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all of our activities. Whoa, okay. So it takes me a good 45 minutes to be spiritually fit to see anybody else. I get up, and this has changed over the years, but I get up now, and before I do anything, I say my prayer. Well, I've always said my prayers right at the beginning, but before I have coffee, I sit and I meditate now for about 20 minutes. And if you use a little insight timer, it'll give you a little doohag, yeah, good girl or whatever. So I just got 365 days today of meditating every morning. And that's mind-boggling to me that I do anything for that consistency. But I do it because I get a result. How's that working for me? I do that a lot. I ask that question a lot. How is that working for me? And so that's when I feel those inspirations or those thoughts in my head of, oh, well, why don't you do this today? And it's not my voice that I'm hearing, and I'm not hearing a voice in the room. I'm just having a thought, and I call it an inspiration. And that's then how I kind of know where my day's going. And I do invite God into my life. What do you got for me today, God? That's it, you know. I want to know what his vision looks like, because I don't have a clue what that looks like. My other favorite saying is, you can't make this shit up, because I'll look in my car sometimes and go, how did this happen? How did this group of people get in this car at this time? Because we are people who normally would not mix. And, you know, we're getting in the car and we're going to a meeting and or going, you know, wherever. Because it's not always just about the meetings, too. I'm all about having fun. I love laughing. I love having fun. We go hiking. We go traveling. Sobriety is good. My world was so small and dark and empty at the end of my drinking. That whole loneliness that the book talks about, it was like no light. Today, it's like, I'm going to Utah in October. I mean, that's just beyond my wildest dreams. So I do have this daily reprieve, and I will talk a little bit about, I don't know,